I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, wherever you're at, all over D.C., listening via 106.7 or in Richmond now, our Richmond audience joining us, 9:10 a.m., 105.1 FM. Thank you for doing so. Remember to take us with you via Odyssey, our app. Radio.com is now Odyssey. You can hit pause. You can rewind the show, whatever you want to do. It's available for you on the app. Right now, on the BetQL guest hotline, we find our guy, Luke Easterling, does a great job previewing and breaking down the draft for the Draft Wire. We've had him on the show throughout this pre-draft season, and with the draft now 2 days away, time to get some final thoughts from Luke. Grant and Danny here, man. Good to talk to you. How you been?
Hey, doing great, fellas. Good to be back.
Luke, we're excited, man. Who's going higher than everybody else thinks?
I just wrote something up for Draft Wire this morning about some names that people should probably start to get used to hearing in that first-round conversation. I think you can see a corner like Tyson Campbell from Georgia. NFL teams love those big, long corners. Again, SEC competition, a lot to like about him. We've heard from Eric Stokes, the other Georgia corner, about him being in that conversation after the pro day he had. But Tyson Campbell feels like another guy that's getting a lot of buzz. Peyton Turner, who's an edge rusher from Houston, big, huge guy, 6'5", 270-plus, great athlete, also had a great workout this offseason. He's a name that I think most people may not realize yet, but could be sneaking in there to the first round conversation. I think we know a lot of the names that are, you know, top 10, top 15. Obviously the big conversation is, you know, who goes number three? Is it Mac Jones? If he does not go number three, how far does he fall? Is it you know, Denver at nine? Is it New England at 15? And he's really one of the keys to the early going of the draft. But those other guys, I think Dylan Raidens from North Dakota State, he's an offensive tackle. Elijah Moore, undersized but explosive wide receiver out of Ole Miss, seems to be, you know, pushing for that number four receiver spot to come off the board in this draft. So definitely a handful of guys that I think could raise some eyebrows Thursday night.
Luke, one of the guys you referenced in that story about players who could go higher than expected is Jamin Davis, the linebacker. And there's starting to be a little bit of traction to him in the middle of the first round. Washington needs a linebacker. They pick at 19. I'm not sure Zaven Collins works for them as much as I'd like, because a lot of teams are seeing him playing off the edge plenty, and they don't need that. Tell me about Davis, and would he potentially be a fit for Washington?
Yeah, he is one of those guys, and I think that when you look at that run of linebackers that could happen in that range, right, I think it starts, honestly, with maybe even Las Vegas at 17. I know they need offensive line help. They need interior defensive line help. But they could go linebacker as well. And you know, how far does Micah Parsons fall? I think everybody agrees he's a top 10 talent, but I think there may be some off-the-field concerns there that could keep him on the board longer than you're used to seeing a player like that stay. But after that, there's going to be some great options, even if he's off the board. So who comes off the board first? Is it Collins, who's a guy that I guess he bulked up to 270 for his pro day, which didn't really make sense to me. I think at his listed size, 6'3", 6'4", 260 or below, I think he's kind of a rare breed of off-ball linebacker in that, you know, he's big and physical and really athletic for that size, and I liked him there. I don't see an edge rusher there. I think he, you know, could be used as a blitzer, and you can get after the passer that way. We have Devin White down here in the Tampa area where I am, and obviously he had 9 sacks last year. So the right guy can still make an impact as a pass rusher. I just don't know if that's a fit for him on the edge. I like him more off the ball. I think when you talk about Davis, I think he has a lot of those things that I really like about Collins as an off-ball guy. He's big, long arms. You know, when you're talking about coverage, you're trying to cut down those passing lanes just like in basketball, right? You want to get your arms up, your hands up, and cut down those passing lanes for opposing quarterbacks. If you're a quarterback and you're trying to fit a ball in to a tight zone or get it over the top of those linebackers, and that linebacker has height, Davis is 6'3", 6'4". He's got those long arms, and you can get to those passes a lot easier. So, again, a very physical guy, very smart defender. And I think at this point, 19 would not be too early for him, especially if a couple of those other linebackers are already off the board.
DraftWire's Luke Easterling with us here on Grant and Danny. Luke, you mentioned linebacker. Owusu Koramoah, the guys at DraftWire had a mock I saw where he was at the pick there for Washington at 19. Grant and I were kicking this around philosophically. Our initial reaction is to kind of recoil where we go, oh, I don't know about the combined skill set with him and Landon Collins and maybe Cam Curl to some degree. It's a bit redundant. And then there's the philosophy of going, yeah, that's awesome. Multiple versatile guys that can kind of line up anywhere. Where do you fall in on that?
Yeah, I think that it can go either way, right? I think that comes down to the coaching staff. That comes down to making sure you deploy those guys in a way that actually accomplishes that. I think what you don't want is, honestly, a lot of what we saw in Arizona last year with a guy like Isaiah Simmons, right? A guy that's an incredible athlete, very versatile, can do everything. But if you don't really have a clear-cut plan for that guy, he can kind of get lost in the shuffle, right? And what should be versatility turns into not finding a position where he can fit because it just – you're not clear on the philosophy of it. So I think it can definitely be a very good thing. And again, to make a Tampa Bay reference down here, Antoine Winfield Jr. last year, very versatile, the guy that can go everywhere and do everything and line up. Todd Bowles down here loves to have safeties that are interchangeable. And I do think when you look at Owusu Koramoah, completely different player in terms of his size and skill set than the guys we mentioned earlier, Davis and Collins, the bigger, more physical guys. But as much as you're in the nickel nowadays, you know, NFL defenses are in nickel and dime more than they're in base. So you're going to have two linebackers on the field, which means athleticism is paramount. So a guy like Koramoah, you can call him a safety or a linebacker, whatever you want to call him. He can line up anywhere. He can cover. He can play the run. I think he was listed at 218. He's probably going to play a little heavier than that. So as long as you have a plan for all of those guys on your defense, it can be an advantage for you because opposing offenses pre-snap will have a more difficult time diagnosing what you're bringing. If you have guys with those similar skill sets that can do a little bit of everything, they're not going to know what's coming.
Luke Easterling of the Draft Network on Grant and Danny. I'm not going to tell you that Kyle Shanahan's going to get so nervous that he doesn't pull the trigger, but do you feel like Shanahan might feel some pressure with the world already all telling him that he's wrong about Mac Jones at number 3? Supposedly the report's now out that the front office doesn't want Mac Jones. They want Trey Lance. Do you think he's feeling the heat at all?
You know, I think if anybody doesn't feel the heat, it's a guy who grew up with his dad as an NFL head coach. I think he probably gets it. And whatever pick he makes, he's going to be, you know, as confident in it as he would be if everybody was on his side about it. I think that at the end of the day, I'm not going to lose my job if I'm wrong about Mac Jones. Kyle's going to lose his job if he's wrong about Mac Jones, if that's the guy. So at the end of the day, you know, the coaches and the general managers, these are the guys that are putting their jobs on the line for these guys. So it's not to say that they're right or wrong more often than I am or anybody else in the media necessarily. Obviously, the track record and the history of quarterbacks being drafted high says the NFL doesn't know as much, you know, any more than anybody else does about who's going to pan out. And again, that's because a lot of that happens after the fact. You can't account for injuries necessarily. You can't account for, you know, not being able to build a winner around your quarterback and make him successful. There's a lot of variables there, especially a quarterback. So, no, I don't think Kyle Shanahan's going to necessarily, you know, feel the pressure to do anything other than what he thinks is best for his franchise. But, I think he is aware that this pick will define his tenure because of what it costs and because when you pick a quarterback, that you're tied to that guy.
Hypothetical, congratulations, you're now the general manager of the Atlanta Falcons. What are you doing it for?
Can I sell it for cap space? Because I'd really like some of that. No, I think at 4, I'm trying to get the heck out of that pick, man. I would love to trade back. I need way more than one player, and I would love to sit there and take Kyle Pitts. I think it would be a great luxury to have, but I already have Hayden Hurst. I got to figure out financially, obviously, what I'm doing with Julio Jones. I'd prefer not to trade him. But I'm married to Matt Ryan financially for the next two seasons. I think his dead cap number in 2022, if they were to get rid of him, was $40 million. So, like, if I take a quarterback there, yes, I'm getting value at the most important position. But if I'm not going to be able to play that guy for another two seasons because of how much it's going to cost to keep Matt Ryan in that job, are you going to pay $40 million to a backup? I don't see that happening. So you're going to try to help that guy. But, man, they need a lot of other things. I would love to sell that pick off to the highest bidder. Come get your other quarterback. Come get Justin Fields. Come get Trey Lance if they're still on the board. Let me go down and add some pieces to my team. I need a running back. I need offensive line help. I need multiple edge rushers. I would love to just take a truckload of picks and move off that pick.
Luke Easterling's on Twitter. Just his name, at Luke Easterling of the Draft Wire. You're listening to him right now on Grant and Danny. At number five, is it as simple as Penei Sewell or Ja'Marr Chase to the Bengals, or is there something I'm not considering?
I mean, I think the only thing you wouldn't be considering there is Kyle Pitts if he doesn't go four, right? I think then, you know, Kyle Pitts himself said on NFL Network this morning that he thinks that quarterbacks are going one through four. I don't know if he knows something
he say
we
that?
Don't.
He did, yeah.
He did. So I don't know if he knows something we don't about either what the Falcons are planning or who may be trying to go up there and get a quarterback. But if he's on the board at five, I think he's absolutely in that conversation with the Bengals, because obviously, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, you've got the Joe Burrow connection, and that makes sense. Obviously, that offensive line is atrocious. I know they brought in, you know, Riley Reiff to play right tackle, at least for this year, but I would still take Sewell there, play him at right guard, and then move him out to tackle next year if that's the way you got to do it. I think he's just a fantastic lineman, no matter you could talk about his height or his arm length and all that. I don't care. He's a franchise left tackle, and that's the kind of thing you want to take at five, as opposed to a pass catcher, which I think the Bengals already have quite a few of. So I would take Sewell there. I don't know that they will. I think part of that is also that this is a very, very deep offensive tackle class. So they're trying to piece together, okay, if we get Sewell at five, who are the receivers that are likely to be there at 38 in the second round, versus if we take, you know, Ja'Marr Chase at five, who are the tackles that are going to be there at 38? And that might have as much to do with who they take at five as anything else.
This is this whole process is subjective, obviously, because it's eye of the beholder. This is an even more subjective type question. Where's the best value in this draft, in your opinion, Luke?
Value in terms of position groups? Or
whatever you think. You know what I mean? Like if I'm at 22 and I can get the fifth best, you know, tackle, is that a better value than the sixth best linebacker? Whatever it is, just in your mind, where's kind of a sweet spot for value going to be?
Right. I think it is on the back half of the first round, maybe even the back third of the first round, if you need an offensive tackle or a pass rusher, an edge rusher. I think this is the worst interior defensive line class I've seen in maybe all of my 21 years of doing this. But the edge rusher class is very interesting. There's no Chase Young. You know, there's no blue chip guy. But there are, you know, 8 or 10 guys that could go in the top 50 or 60 picks who are, you know, could make a claim to, you know, the number 2 or 3 or 4 spot in this class. So I think no matter how those guys fall, you're going to be able to find some talent on the back third probably of the first round if you need that type of guy. And offensive tackle is very similar. I think obviously it starts with Sewell and Rashawn Slater from Northwestern at the top. But after that, Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech, Sam Cosmi from Texas, Dylan Radins, who I mentioned earlier, is a surprise first-round pick. Those guys are all, you know, left tackles who could start immediately. If you need a right tackle, Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State, who could also play guard. Jalen Mayfield from Michigan's another guy. Alex Leatherwood from Alabama play tackle and guard. So I think edge rusher and offensive tackle, particularly, like I said, that back third of the first round. Because think about it, when you're talking about so many quarterbacks going at the top of this draft, you're pushing all that other positional talent down the board. We could talk about value. How about on defense? You might get to 10 before we have a defensive player taken off the board. Dallas Cowboys at 10 might have their pick of every defensive player in this draft. So you talk about value. If you need defense, you're loving the fact that all these quarterbacks, all these pass catchers, offensive linemen are going early.
Luke, if I was to tell you that I just came back from the future and someone traded up into the top 10 to get a quarterback after the big three, who would you put your money on having done it, and who do they take?
You know, I think I have to look at who's the most desperate. What's the coaching situation? What are the picks like? Do they have enough picks to move up? Obviously, Denver makes sense because they're closest to number four, right? But if I had to peg a team that's desperate enough to make that move, I know Washington's probably in that conversation, but I feel like there's not going to be a team more desperate than the Chicago Bears, because of where they're at in that regime. You know, Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, they have to do something at that position. I'm sorry, Andy Dalton's not going to cut it. That's not the type of quarterback that's going to save your job. And I know picking at 20, it's a hard move, but I mean, they need to be bold. If Justin Fields, I've seen Justin Fields mocked all over the place. I think he should go number two to the Jets, no question. But if he happens to be on the board outside the top five, and it's not going to cost them a super exorbitant amount, even if it does, I'd make the move personally. But anytime you get outside the top five, the price tag starts to go down and down with every pick. So if they can get anywhere near the back end of the top 10 and get a guy like Justin Fields, whatever it costs, I think the Chicago Bears will be the team desperate enough to go up and do it.
Luke, I am not a professional draft analyst. You are. I'm just a pudgy dolt on the radio that likes to flap his gums. But last year, I fell in love with Chase Claypool. And I just kept talking about Chase Claypool with anybody that would come on the show. And I love Chase Claypool. And he's awesome and he's amazing. And I love him so much. Do you have a Chase Claypool this year? Is there somebody that may not be, you know, the top half of the first round or something like that, but just a guy that you, every time you turn on the tape, you chuckle?
I do. It's a guy that actually reminds me a lot of Antonio Gibson, who I know you guys know well. And it's Demetric Felton from UCLA. Very similar. Is he a wide receiver? Is he a running back? Personally, I don't care. I want him on the field. I want him in my offense. And I want the ball in his hands as many different ways as I can get it. And when you have a guy like that in your offense, obviously you guys know what it can happen. Antonio Gibson was one of my favorite players in last year's draft and was the answer to that question for me last year. And I see a lot of the same stuff in Felton. Again, a guy that can line up in the slot, line up in the backfield, you motion him, you find creative ways to get him involved in the offense, and he's just such an explosive player, a natural runner with the ball, understands what's happening in front of him, and can make defenders pay for not taking his speed and explosiveness seriously. So I think he'll be a fun guy at the next level no matter where he goes. Seems like he's, you know, a third or fourth round guy for most people. If he's anywhere in that range, I'm going for it.
Luke, what's your setup like on draft night? Do you order pizza and wings and just sit there and type away all night, or do you got more going on than that?
Well, if you think about it, I actually stay away. I answered this question on the Super Bowl, too, because I'm covering the Bucks too, right? So I have to stay away from that stuff because finger foods and typing don't really go well together. I end up with a really gross keyboard if I'm eating wings and pizza and working as feverishly as I do on draft night. So I try to stick with stuff where I need utensils to eat, plenty of water, plenty of coffee, maybe a little something stronger in that coffee as the night goes on, depending on how things go. But that's the setup.
Luke, great with us as always, man. Enjoy the draft, buddy. Appreciate the time.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. Take care.
Financial details coming out on the swap Washington to Miami made, moving some late-round picks, going back and forth, and Eric Flowers to the football team. Remember, Flowers started at guard, then they wanted to keep him, but they didn't want to pay him what the Dolphins were willing to, so he left in free agency. They've now brought him back via trade today. Sounds like Washington's only going to pay him $3 million. The Dolphins are going to pay $6 million of the $9 million against the cap this year. So it's financially
pretty sweet,
really sharp, you know, really decent deal for them. And this kind of always goes back to the Scherf thing for me, which is guards are out there. Like, they can be found. You can find pretty decent guards without breaking the bank, generally.
Right. So I posted the top 10 spending. This is before we knew about how much Eric Flowers is going to cost Washington. So instead of $35 million at the guard position, it'll be $29 million. Still, $6 million more than anybody else. And everyone's going, well, look at the other teams on the list. They're good. They're good. And that's great. They've got good offensive lines. I challenge everyone to find a good offensive line, not more than twice as much as Tampa Bay is doing it for. See if you can have two good guards.
You lost me there.
So Washington is spending, now with the updated numbers, it looks like $29 million on guard.
Yep.
The next closest team is 23. After that, it's 18. Then it's 16, 16, 15. So Washington spent 29. A team that's fifth is spending 15. I'm saying I'd like to have a good offensive line too. I bet you we could do it without spending twice as much as Tampa Bay does.
Yeah.
But bet you we'd have good guards without spending three times what Pittsburgh does.
You had the money. You had the money. Can you imagine that just always being your philosophy? Like, hey, Danny, why'd you spend $142 on takeout tonight? We have the money.
I had the money today.
Danny, why did you got all the clothes you need. Why'd you just spend $800 on a new dress shirt?
I did a PS5 and an Xbox One bundle at the same time. I had the money. Just got I get paid on Friday. We're good.
You have the money for the moment. That's true. But you're, first of all, that money's allowed to roll over into the future years, some of it. Second of all, there's other issues. There's other things you can figure out. You have the money, right? You pretty quickly could not have the money if you went out and did things like, I don't know, getting a tight end to help Logan Thomas. Right now you have zero tight ends on your roster with any kind of NFL experience that are any good other than Logan Thomas. Maybe you could have added a left tackle, perhaps, where you don't have a starting NFL player or free safety or a linebacker, which is still a major need. But I'll say in a vacuum, let's just talk Flowers trade. To me, that's a win. That's a slam dunk. It seems like a really smart, good thing. So kudos to them for pulling that off. Next, Max Scherzer's on the Hill tonight. It is a Scherz day in D.C. Always fun when Max is toeing the rubber. Want to look into his season because he's been masterful so far this year. And whether or not the DH in Toronto, American League rules, the way it's supposed to be. Just kidding, everyone. Don't get so upset. But American League rules tonight. Will the DH get the Nats going? Is they're able to get an extra hitter into the lineup? That's next on G&D.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Max ready for the 1-2. He winds and he deals it. Swing and a foul tip. It's held, that strike three, and Max Scherzer passes Mike Mussina on the all-time strikeout list. They'll put another baseball in that collection. 2,814 career strikeouts. Number 21 all-time for Max Scherzer. And the crowd will salute as they put it up on the video board as Max Scherzer is climbing up the list all-time.
After a day off, the Nats back in action tonight against the Toronto Blue Jays in Dunedin, Florida. Because where else would the Blue Jays play? Welcome back. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Jays are 10-11, three games back of the first-place Red Sox, a surprise front-runner, American League East Division. You get to use the DH tonight, which we'll get into in a second, but Max is on the Hill. As you just heard, Dave Jagler on the call here on the Fan. Last time he pitched, he moved ahead of Mike Mussina on the all-time strikeouts list. Scherzer is 36 years old. He'll be 37 by the end of this season. So far, dominant.
It's been great, man. Opening day, I'm going, this may be the new normal, where he still thinks he's the same guy. And he's trying to challenge guys with fastballs that were 97 with some carry. Now they're 95, a little bit flatter, and they're a little bit more hittable because of how good these guys are. But since then, he's given up a earned run. A singular earned run over his four starts.
Yeah, 1.80 ERA through four starts for Scherzer. first 25 innings of the season, 33 strikeouts and just 4 walks. League hitting 161 off of him. So I did a deep dive into some of the numbers on Scherzer. Here's what I'm finding. Fastball velocity is down this year. He has been pretty steadily and constantly dating back to 2015, his first year here in Washington, right around 94 miles per hour. In fact, his velocity jumped by about 1.5 miles per hour when he left Detroit and came to D.C. But he's been right around 94.2 to 94.9 since 2015 for the first 6 years of this contract. Last year, he peaked his highest fastball velocity ever for a full season at 94.7 miles per hour as a 35-year-old, which is crazy.
That is nuts, by the way.
This year, he's lost about a mile and a half per hour on his fastball. He's down to 93.4.
Mm-hmm.
Throws his fastball a little bit more than he did last year, but about the same as he's always thrown his fastball. Here is what's interesting, though, about Max Scherzer this year. He's throwing his slider less, threw it 19% of the time last year, about 15% of the time this year. He's throwing his cutter a little bit more, from 10% of the time to 12% of the time. Curveball a little bit less, changeup a little bit more, but from a sheer stuff perspective, really the only pitch that he's throwing more of now is that cutter that he's been leaning on.
Yeah.
Otherwise, kind of the same guy, velocity down a little bit, but he's learning to get by. And it's not like he's throwing 87.
Yeah.
You know, around 95 instead of being up around 98, 99.
Really is incredible, man. It's what true greatness is, right? Where the people that show up to the ballpark and your whole team are like, nobody's ever been like, oh, did you not get a great night's sleep last night? Oh, you're not feeling that great today? Oh, your arm's a little bit dead. You're a little bit tired. Hey, by the way, bud, if you can get a couple outs, that'd be nice. Nope, we got to get 27, and the other team's waiting to beat our brains and our livelihoods depend on it. 30-some thousand people are here in a normal year. You got to go compete. That guy finds a way to do it. That guy finds a way every single bleeping time to adjust to beat you. His competitiveness is his greatest asset. So he probably realized, I can't just hump back and blow cheddar by these guys anymore. So what else can I do? How about I pitch mix a little bit more? I drop my curveball in early. I go to the cutter late under the hands of lefties, which is now kind of an out pitch for him a lot of times. His mix and match is awesome. He's using his control more than anything else.
Here's a game changer for him so far, and this is not sustainable in my opinion. But if you're wondering through four starts, how did we get here with Scherzer? He's not walking anybody.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his lowest walk rate that he's had all but for one season in his career. And in fact, 8.2 strikeouts per walk at this point. The best ratio he's ever had before. So this is, several times.
This is a guy who's really good at that,
right,
by the way.
Several times, yeah. Cy Young candidate who's always struck out a lot of guys and not walked a lot of guys. And right now, he's not walking anybody.
That's insane.
A little over one batter per nine innings while striking out about 12 batters per nine innings. For
God, he's great.
At this point. So we're seeing a guy reinvent himself a little bit. Generally, though, when you lose a little bit of velocity, just in your own head, you're now fighting it, right? Mentally. You'd be able to speak to this better than I can, Danny, I would think. But the way I see it, if I'm Max and I'm down 1.5 miles per hour with my heater, I have to convince myself to keep throwing it. He's throwing it more than he did last year. So he's very comfortable locating that pitch, and he's throwing it for strikes. Another thing that I found interesting, way fewer ground balls so far. Now, it's pretty early. We shouldn't probably dive this deep into the numbers after four starts, 25 innings. But it is just, some of the noticeable things. It's pretty telling. Way fewer ground balls. He's already a fly ball pitcher, and he's getting more fly balls. But the home run rate has come down. And obviously, that's with four on opening day. But that's been where he's been victimized in the past.
Absolutely. Because guys bet, and he's coming right after people.
He's going to throw strikes. He's not going to be nibbling. I'm going to sit on something in the middle of the plate.
Now, I obviously can't hit at that level, never could. But if I was a major leaguer, I'd go, if I get to two strikes with this dude, there's no point. He's got four put-away pitches. Whatever he'd like to put me away with, he can. I'm going to avoid two strikes. I'll go be aggressive. I'll bet first pitch fastball, see if I can put my A swing on it. That's what I would do to him. So, if he rolls in a curveball, you tip your cap. If you're swinging through a changeup, tip your cap. It's basically, I'll bet on something. Get it, go all in, and see if I can barrel one. That's how guys victimize him. And he doesn't have time to go, well, let me tantalize someone with a sinker just out of the zone. He's there to get this at bat over with.
The bigger problem for the Nationals overall this season, terms of looking at hitting and pitching has probably been starting pitching. Mm-hmm. But if you look at their last trip through the rotation, where they were much better, got a really good start from Scherzer. Corbin was very good when he played against the Cardinals earlier this week. Wasn't nearly as good this weekend.
But they still had a chance in that game.
Ross,
yeah, he wasn't good.
Fetty, Vinsal, they haven't hit. So now they're pitching a little bit better. And the bullpen's been magnificent for going on a couple weeks. But shut out five times in almost 20 games. And they're not driving the ball, as we said. They're dead last in home runs hit as a team with 14. They're just not able to score the runs they need. So the godsend could be that they're getting a designated hitter for this mini-series with Toronto. So you're going to have Turner playing short, top of the order, and you'll be able to add a professional hitter in the middle of the order. Ryan Zimmerman's been nowhere to be found because they're trying to get Josh Bell going.
Right.
And he's a switch hitter, so when you're facing right-handed pitching, mostly the plan is that the left-handed bat of Bell will be in the lineup, and Zim could be out for the most part. But even though he's hit when he's been in the lineup, we haven't seen much of him. He's got an 814 OPS. There's only one guy on the team that's higher than him that is healthy, and that's Josh Harrison. He's got a higher OPS than Turner right now, and it's been a couple pinch hit at bats over the last several days for Zim as they can't score. So it'll be nice to get him back in the lineup, 10 for 34 on the season, hitting about 300. And I would imagine that would be the plan. You put him at DH, you keep Bell at first base, and you see what you can do to try to create a little offense here.
You got
to
do it. I mean, so I understand the point. Like, you're start for offense right now, so you're going, maybe you could just sit Josh Bell. But they, in order to get to be really good, they need Josh Bell to be good.
They have to get him.
So you got to get him going. So that comes at the expense of Zim's at-bats. I think when everything's normal, if there is such a thing in this crazy time that we're in, but if everything was equal, I think, you know, you may see Zim twice a week, right, kind of bookending it, maybe sit Bell against a tough lefty or give him a day, or if you got an American League game, have Bell DH off his feet, something like that, whatever. But right now, given what happened to start the year where Bell was relegated to riding on his Peloton at home, he needs at-bats. I mean, he was killing the ball in spring training, Now he's hitting a .119 with a .238 slugging percentage, just anemic type stuff, pitcher stuff. That's what pitchers do at this point in Major League Baseball. He's absolutely got to get going. So many key at-bats with runners on. He's only driven in three runs, struck out 15 times. He's never been a low strikeout guy, but he's not this. He now is like he and Kyle Schwarber are the same dude at this point. And that's not who Josh Bell is or has been. That's not what they booked him to do. So he's got to get going. I mean, there's, you could dress that up a bunch of different ways. We're like, well, maybe he has to hit.
Right.
Like he has to hit so much.
And I would add both of them to the conversation. You know, Bell and Schwarber.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
That was the entire offseason.
Mm-hmm.
That was the story. I'll speak for ourselves on this show. Can the Nats be good this year? If their offense turns around, their offense was abysmal last season. Is Bell going to be really good? Is Schwarber going to be really good?
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean hit for average. Kyle Schwarber's never going to hit for average.
Right.
I don't think he's going to hit for average. I know he's going to strike out 1,000 times. I'm not a strikeout. I don't love guys that strike out that much and don't hit for average. It's not really for me. I don't care a ton about batting average. I do care more about run production and power and some of those things. But I like a little more hit tool than Schwarber's
got. Yeah, what's your role, right? I can live with Kyle Schwarber.
I can live with him too. But when he is this key an ingredient,
yeah.
And right now it's particularly exposed because you don't have Juan Soto in the middle of the lineup, it can rear its head. You know, you become a swing and miss team a little bit more often. But the Nats have scored 62 runs. Only the Mets have scored fewer runs than the Nationals.
Mm.
And again, I will point out, because of the COVID situation, they have played fewer games than everybody in baseball. But, if you want to look at per game, we could do that. But I'll just tell you that there's a team in, say, the Angels or the White Sox. They played two more games than the Nationals. They both scored well over 100 runs. The Nats have scored 62. They were the last team in the sport to score more than 6 runs in a game when they scored a grand total of 7 when they got past that threshold. I think that was in Saturday's game.
Saturday, they won
7-1. Yeah. That was the first time they'd scored over 6 runs. So they're due to break out, and hopefully it's tonight with Scherzer on the hill. But they got to put together good at-bats. And at some point, someone's going to have to run into one with a few guys on base.
That's allowed to happen.
What has happened to this point is they've hit very few home
runs. No one's done that.
When they hit a home run, it has basically been a solo shot almost every
100%, man. And again, it's this meat of the order. You know Turner, and when Soto comes back, they're Turner and Soto. These are very good offensive pieces, and they'll do something a couple times a week to help you win a baseball game. The guys that they're counting on, It's basically right now 3 through 8. Now, when Robles hits 9, but you know what I mean. 3 through 8 are not doing anywhere near enough for a Major League Baseball lineup to be successful. That's got to change. Otherwise, you'll be down at the bottom of the division.
This is one way to get my attention. Our buddy Chris said, I'm on hold. I would love to talk Nats or Washington football team guards, but I'm a versatile P1, so I can pivot topics.
That's a great pivot.
What's up, Chris? How's it going, dude?
Hey, Chris.
Hey, I've been on hold trying to tell you you're making too much about this guard thing, but now that you're talking Nats,
guard.
Like that guy in Dodgeball, guard.
Yeah.
Anyway, I am totally with you on the Nats. Everybody's been talking about Corbin and Strasburg being injured, and is John Lester still on the team? Is he summering in Florida? What is he? I don't know what this guy's doing.
No one knows right now.
But
in fairness to John Lester, who you're just slapping all over the place, my guy had thyroid surgery and he had COVID. So let's give John Lester a little bit of a break.
He's going to throw 11 bullpens before he is on a 28 pitch count.
Let
at some point.
Let him throw the bullpens. They got days off every 3 days right now.
I think he's going back to college before he can pitch again or something. I don't know
what he's
doing.
Play the
Billy Madison. His dad's going to graduate him every year.
Yeah, he's going to Billy Madison the entire minors and college before he can pitch again. I don't know. But the issue has always been the offense with this team. You have to have a good offense to get to the playoffs. Pitching wins series in the playoffs, and I feel like that's what Rizzo and the learners have been focused on, and it worked out for them, but you've got to have enough offense to get through the initial 162. You're going to need games where you blow the other team out or score 8 runs, heaven forbid. I am really, at this point, I'm very, very concerned about the offense because Bell has looked lost since he had his COVID stint. Schwarber is Schwarbering, and keep in mind, these are two still relatively young ball players who have 30 plus home run seasons on their resume, and both teams were willing to part with them for not much. I mean, they let Schwarber walk, and the Pirates let Bell, a 28-year-old hitter, go. So, do they know something that we don't? Was there something in the advanced metrics, launch angle, barrel rate, whatever, whiff rate that was suggesting that these guys were maybe anomalies those seasons that they had? I'm concerned. Turner Soto is great, but there are seven other positions in the lineup.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, you can kind of go player by player and say, are they going to be better than this the rest of the way, or is this about what they are? And we could do that at some point today if you'd like to. I mean, there are a few guys I would say definitively are going to give you more than they have to this point, which is why I think you can feel pretty good. There's probably only one player on the entire team that I would say is due for regression, and it's already started to happen, and that's Josh Harrison.
Sure. He's not going to hit 500.
Almost to a man. Otherwise, when you go player by player, you say, look at the average or the OPS or whatever, you'd say, back of the baseball card says they'll be better than that. And that's where, if you're Mike Rizzo, I think you slept pretty good last night, pretty early this season. G&D on the Fan, our double play is next, and Danny has told me he's going to quiz me.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe? Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Don't know what about.
I got a quiz.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Appreciate, as always, you guys making the show part of your day. In case you're curious, wearing a cotton polo with khaki shorts and white shoes. These are the Velcro jams, in case you're wondering.
Mm.
Danny, I asked Alexa today, because you know I do that sometimes in the morning.
Yeah.
Alexa, what's the temperature going to be? A lot of people's Alexas might be telling them the answer right now. And she said 87 degrees.
It's hot. Hot in the hot tub today and tomorrow.
I said, gee golly jeepers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing. Let's get to our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Each day at this time, we give you a double play. Sponsored by Mattress Warehouse. Free next day delivery. Setup available on all orders. Over $7.99 and a 1-year price guarantee. Learn more at sleephappens.com. All right, Danny, what's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
I thought this could be fun to do. So, Darius, a little quiz music if you have it handy, my friend. I'm going to quiz my friend Grant Paulson. The census just finished.
Oh, boy.
The United States Census. Somebody, for some reason, came to our house, our condo, a couple years ago before we moved. No fewer than four times, and asked us the same set of questions and set up on our laptops.
I actually remember doing that too, but I filled it out on my phone and just sent it back.
It didn't matter what was happening. It didn't matter that we had to go or that we didn't want her in the house. She just came and set up her little laptop and booted up and put in the same information that I was still Daniel and my wife was still the same name and our kid was still the same name, whatever else. But whatever, it's done. The census has been released. There are six, count them, six states that are gaining a congressional district / electoral vote. There are seven states that are losing. So one of the six states gained two, the other five just gained one, and there are seven states that lost a vote, a congressional district, right? Because so that's just where people are shuffling. In fact, one was over the number that I saw, 89 people. 89 people either didn't fill out the census or don't live there anymore.
What?
So it cost this one place an electoral vote / congressional district or whatever, and it went to somewhere else. It's kind of wild.
That's amazing.
So give me the six that gained votes, and give me the seven that lost.
Okay, lost means people are leaving that place. I'll say California.
California, minus one. First time they've lost one in a long time. Minus
down
one.
To like 53.
Yep.
Minus one. I will say Texas.
Texas is not a loser. Are you looking for losers now?
This was a gainer.
This is a gainer. Texas gained
Gloria
two.
Gloria Gaynor.
Texas gained two.
Did they really?
They're the only place to gain two.
Wow.
Texas plus two. Utah, two.
All right. GOP probably happy about that. Let's see. Where are people leaving? I'm going to say people are leaving Florida.
People are going to Florida, my
are
friend.
They
Florida's
really?
A plus one. People are always going to Florida. Florida, steady Eddie, just keeps gaining and gaining and gaining every time we do this.
All right.
So that's three total.
I'm going to say people are leaving New York.
People are leaving New York. New York was the 89 people away from not losing an electoral vote or whatever you want to call this, a district.
You're kidding.
And they lost one.
Wow.
89 people. That's the difference between having one and not having one.
Let's see. Where are people going? I'm going to say people are going to Colorado. Everyone I know is moving to Denver.
Plus one, Colorado.
All right.
Plus one. You nailed that
guess.
One.
I'm going to say people are going to Wyoming.
No.
All right, I don't know anyone that went to Wyoming other than Chris Cooley. He's the only one, so I don't know why I said that. I thought maybe he'd get them an electoral vote, like there's four Cooleys.
Popular guy, yeah.
Right. And now there's 19 people in Wyoming.
One of Wyoming's buddies got one, though. Who's friends with Wyoming out there? Joe.
Joe the Rooster Russo?
No.
Cup of Joe. Joe is coffee. Washington State?
No, near that, though.
What about Nevada? That's a state where people are leaving,
Nevada, no change in Nevada. No change in Nevada.
All right, then it'd have to be either Dakotas or Utah.
No.
They're right by Wyoming.
Name a great quarterback.
Joe Montana.
Montana plus one.
Idaho.
Nope.
Okay. I'll do one more guess, and then you can fill me in.
Here we go.
I'm going to say a lot of people I know have moved to Carolina.
North Carolina. Raise up, plus one.
See, anecdotally in my life, I kind of have got discovered.
Well, but you know what? Those phenomena are things. Like, there's enough people that are doing that, that now they're plus one.
All right, hold on. So give me all of the places that are gaining people first.
Here are the Greg Louganises. Texas plus two. Colorado plus one. Florida plus one. So that's three. Montana plus one. North Carolina plus one. And Oregon plus one. Didn't have Oregon there as being in the office
pool. That is not that we're a political show. I mean, this isn't like endorsing or saying anything bad.
No, you are. You're specifically saying something.
Hopefully everyone can be okay and no one can, not sleep tonight. I think that's a net positive if you're like political party standpoint from a federal election for like the GOP, right?
They According to the analysis that I read, yes.
It seems like more red than blue there.
Yes, okay. That's the analysis that I read. So no one's advocating for anything. Here are, please everyone be okay. Please no one be mad.
This is a conversation on a platform that used to be about like opinions and personality and entertaining people. In 2021, I'm like, please no one be upset.
I'm not saying I like it.
I'm not saying California is mostly blue.
But there's information and maybe. Here are the Lehues, the Harris, California out there. You said that one. Illinois. Okay. Michigan, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. Those are the seven that lost.
Four of those go blue generally. The second and third from the last are hardcore battleground states. If I could channel my inner, I can't even name a guy on TV.
Steve Kornacki. So here's what I'm looking at. Ohio. Look at this county in Ohio.
On NBC, Danny. You partisan jerk.
Oh.
You named a guy on NBC.
I'm just naming people.
But now we know how you feel. Do you understand?
Yeah,
you can't name a guy.
You can't name him.
The hypothetical guy at the board. We don't know if it's John King or Kornacki.
The other guy.
And then the last one was West Virginia, which is as red as an apple.
So they went from 5 to 4 votes total. But there are a couple things that I thought were interesting. Illinois, Michigan, and Ohio, kind of that Midwestern sort of cluster.
Yeah.
Cold. And people went places that are warmer, by and large, for the other ones. Florida and North Carolina. I don't know if Montana's warmer, but Texas. People moved south some. That was kind of a thing here during the last handful of years. Just interesting to me. I thought that was fun, good information. We advocate and oppose all the right things, as far as you guys know.
Yeah, everything that you think listening is what I think.
We like sports so much.
I just want to talk about sports. And remember, I have two kids.
Yep.
I desperately want to keep my job.
I just love sports.
Please don't get me fired.
I just want to talk about the sports.
I don't think I said anything that you can possibly be mad about. But if you were mad for some reason about something I said, think about my children.
Just understand that I agree with your opinion. And your opinion is the right one.
I have a 2-year-old daughter and a 4-month-old son. Check out my Instagram. They're adorable.
They're so cute.
I'm just trying to keep food on the table for them. I want to keep a roof over their heads. So if you don't like me, if I said something in some way that is a personal affront to everything you stand for in this commentary, please remember the children. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe.
Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.